It is a rarity in Scripture that we might hear a little affirmation that when we come together and pray, so maybe even this morning I could say like Peter, Lord, it's good that we are here, that we're coming together to celebrate these mysteries of our faith, and again, to be mindful as people who journey during Lent, to be open to the ways of God, his insight, and sometimes even his challenge. Now, the scriptures, for me, kind of focus on two different stories or portrayals of things. And the first one is with the call of Abraham from the first reading from the book of Genesis. From chapter 12 on, for the next 13 chapters, it describes really, always on this second Sunday of Lent, this stage of salvation history that's marked by this call of Abraham. God inviting him in a whole new venture, to go to a new place, to go with his wife, even though he's also very old, and to move and to know that somehow God has great promise. And it kind of connects with last week's reading, mindful that Adam and Eve were in the garden, they had everything, and they were instructed not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and bad, and yet they did. And then they know that in some sense they were cursed at the end. But today we hear the opposite word that is repeatedly emphasized today, that God spoke to Abraham and said, I will bless you and your descendants. A very positive revelation of God that again reminds us of God's faithfulness and really his initiative, that he has not only plans, but he wants what's really good for us. And so we hear how Abraham then takes on this challenge. And the response that really God expects from Abraham and maybe from us as believers is very important because it demands an act of faith, an act of hope, and even one that might be an act of obedience that says we are called to these things because God knows that they can bring about an incredible blessing of grace and of things that we can't imagine. And part of this plan then unfolds knowing that if we would recall on the vigil mass of Christmas that we hear the long genealogy of Matthew's gospel that again traces many important people and knowing that we can trace back Jesus' lineage really back to almost Abraham, the father of faith. And so we know that this is important, that God's son then has connections to Abraham, who was open to God's blessings. And so we listen to the gospel today. It's a transfiguration story. And it's a great mystery. It's the fourth mystery of light. If you pray the rosary, the mysteries of light. And it's a great mystery to contemplate even during Lent, to think of God somehow wanting a certain thing to become known. Now, we have to know that right before the transfiguration of Jesus, that something really important happened in the gospel beforehand that might help us get a context. We know that in the gospels, especially Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that Jesus would ask this important question to his disciples, who do people say that I am, and who do you say that I am? And it's Peter who gives this bold proclamation, you are the Christ, the anointed, the Messiah. In Mark's gospel, I think he says, you are Christ, the Son of the living God. But he's affirming that he has awareness of who Jesus is. And then right away, Jesus acknowledges Peter's great faith and awareness. And then he reminds them what that means, to be the anointed, the Messiah, that he was going to die, he was going to suffer and rise again. And then Peter kind of went in the wrong direction. He said, oh, Lord, that can't happen. And Jesus rebuked him and saying, you know, get behind me if you're not going to be with me. And so that happened before this great experience, Jesus calling Peter, James, and John up the mountain. And in my experience, the only time I've been in the Holy Land, the Transfiguration has great meaning because Mount Tabor is a high mountain. It's one of the highest places, at least for many miles, and still today, that you couldn't really drive a bus on the road because it's quite narrow, kind of circling the mountain going up. But once you get up top, it's an incredible vision. But to say that Jesus brought them up for this incredible, holy, mysterious experience. His face became changed, his clothes were transformed, and there was light. A light that was maybe bright, incomprehensible. Even Peter, you know, really couldn't describe it, saying, "Well, Lord, it's good that we're here. Maybe we can make some tents and stay here a while." But the experience was very quick, and it might be characterized, well, we would put it in common day terms, and maybe this is not the best description, but maybe it was like a spiritual snapshot of Jesus. You get a quick glimpse, and it's gone. But it reminds us of something that is waiting for us, Jesus as the glorified Son of God. And it was meant to kind of remove the scandal of the cross and that they would somehow see him with blood and with great suffering and trial, but to say that through all this, there would be something incredibly good waiting at the end. Some people who maybe had surgeries can relate to this experience. Once in a while, the doctor will say, "Well, we have to do this, and at the end, you'll have this." You know, someone who says, the doctor claims you need a new knee, and the doctor says, "Well, we need to do a surgical procedure. At the very end, you'll be able to walk and be without pain." And that's maybe after a month or two. But after the surgery, you realize there's some things you didn't know, that there's a little bit of pain, and then there's the challenge of therapy. And then sooner or later, you're stretched, and there is the outcome that is positive. That the transfiguration of Jesus might involve us and engage us to say that we not only look to Christ, but sometimes as we too follow him, we have to encounter the cross and certain things that maybe are painful or a struggle to grow in faith. And yet the transfiguration enables us, believers, to not be afraid, knowing that God desires to not only be with us as Christ is, but even to use our imperfections, our struggles, our sinfulness and talents to reveal God's glory and love even to others. It's part of God's plan. It is mysterious, and yet it can become known by prayer and being alert. So one of the questions we might ask ourselves is, have you ever had a mountaintop experience? And then to think back once while saying, I did experience this closeness of Christ or God. I can't explain it, but it made an imprint upon my heart and soul or mind. And that during Lent, it's a reminder that Christ wants us then to have that spirit of perseverance and to again know that we can renew our hope that glory awaits us, the gifts of God. I want to end with a story that in a different way might help us think about the transfiguration or an experience of it. It's by a novelist, Nikos Kazan. It's a very hard name. It's even harder than my name. Kazantikas. He says, in the remote mountains of northern Greece, there once lived a monk who had desired all his life to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem to see the Holy Sepulchre, to walk around it three times, to kneel, and then to return home a new person. And gradually, through the years, even in a monastery, he saved a couple pennies every week or something like that from his allowance. He once while begged in the local villages nearby. And finally, at the end of his life, he had enough money to make the trip. So one day, he opened the gates of the monastery, staff in hand, a small bag with his money, and with great anticipation to the way to Jerusalem. But no sooner had he left within several footsteps outside the monastery, he encountered a man in rags and bent down on the ground that was picking up herbs. He was very hungry. He said, "Where are you going, Father?" The man asked, and the monk said, "To the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. By God's grace, I shall walk there, walk around it three times, kneel, and return home a different man from what I am." And the man said, "How much money do you have, Father?" And the monk said, 30 pounds. And the man said, "Please give me that 30 pounds. I have a wife and hungry children. Give me the money. Walk three times around me, then kneel and go back to your monastery." And within a moment, without hesitation, the monk scratching the ground with his staff. He took the 30 pounds out of his bag, gave it to the man, walked around him 3 times, knelt, went back to the gates of the monastery, and returned home. He returned a new person, amazingly, of course, having recognized within the return that the beggar was Christ himself. And not in some magical place far away, but right outside the monastery door. In abandoning his quest for this remote, special, incredible event, the monk discovered meaning far more profound than the ordinary experience close to home. All that he had given up came suddenly rushing back to him with a joy that was unforeseen. And when we continue our journey as people of faith, we also have that potential to have a glimpse of glory, to somehow see Christ and experience him even as we journey, but to know at times it might come with a struggle. It also may come at the end of a struggle. But in the end, it is Christ calling us to new life and to new hope and to awareness of yet God's enduring love. Let us continue the Lenten journey and know that Christ calls us because he cares about us just as he did Abraham. And sometimes he not only calls us, but he sends us forth with simple words, go.